नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 14, Text 21. Satyaham ekaya graya Shadhyayatma priyasatam Shadhyayatma priyasatam Bhakti punati manista Bhakti punati manista Svapakana pisambhavat Svapakana pisambhavat Bhaktya by devotional service Aham I Ekaya, unalloyed, Brahya, am to be obtained, Shraddhaya, by faith, Atma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Priya, the object of love, Satam, of the devotees, Bhakti, pure devotional service. Punati purifies. Magnista, fixing me as the only goal. Swapakan, dog eaters. Api, even. Sambhavat, from the contamination of low birth. Translation. Only by practicing unalloyed devotional service with full faith in me can one obtain me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am naturally dear to my devotees, who take me as the only goal of their loving service. By engaging in such pure devotional service, even the dog eaters can purify themselves from the contamination of their low birth. Translation responsibly. Only by practicing unalloyed devotional service with full faith in me, can one obtain me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am naturally dear to my devotees, who take me as the only goal of their loving service. By engaging in such pure devotional service, even the dog eaters can purify themselves from the contamination of their low birth. Purport. Sambhavad indicates jati dosat, or the pollution of low birth. Jati dosat does not refer to mundane social, economic, or professional status, but rather to one's degree of spiritual enlightenment. All around the world, many people are born into rich and powerful families, but they often acquire abominable habits that are part of their so-called family tradition. However, even unfortunate persons who are taught from birth to engage in sinful activities can at once be purified by the potency of pure devotional service. Such service must have Lord Krishna as the only goal. Manishtha must be rendered with full faith, Shraddha, and must be unalloyed or without any selfish motivation, Ekaya. Om Ajnana Chimurandasya Ajnana Jana Shalakaya Chakshu Militam Yena Tasma Shri Guru Venamahan Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stavitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kudamayan Tadati Swapadantikam Anshakalpa Thirvishtra Kripa Sundu Bevisham Patitanam Pavnebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaur Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Ram, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Devamita Swami Tinamini. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamini. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nimishin Sashin Yavadi Prasthi Charja Satarini. So, we'll continue with the section Krishna is instructing Uddhava about the topmost yoga system, which is pure devotional service. Now, interesting enough, in the previous text, the Lord is explaining how by practicing the different yoga processes, or by studying the Vedas, or performing any kind of pious work, or austerities, or renunciation, that one can't actually access Him. And then he further substantiates what he says by saying, only by practicing the unalloyed devotional service with full faith in Him can actually one attain Him. So it's very clear that Krishna in this verse is stressing how devotional service should be performed to Him and no one else. Because sometimes in the Bhagavad Gita, especially when Krishna says, surrender unto me, man mana bhava mad bhakto. Some people think that surrender unto me means surrender unto myself, who is God. But here, Lord Krishna says, one performing devotional service with full faith in Him can obtain Him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna is very clear in His instructions in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam as well. So I just thought I would discuss how this unalloyed devotional service, as it's been explained by the different acharyas, by Srila Jiva Goswami and Rupan Sanatan Goswami, that unalloyed devotional service has to be free from any kind of conception of, mental speculation or fruitive work, any kind of desire to satisfy the self. Pure devotional service means that our activities are not tinged at all with any kind of selfish motive, that is purely performed for the service of Krishna. And of course for us practitioners or sadhakas, it's a gradual process that has to happen. We don't just springboard and automatically we become pure unalloyed devotees of the Lord. It's a gradual evolution of the consciousness that has to happen. So this of course, as Krishna is explaining to Uddhava, that you have those who practice the mystic yoga system or scrutinizingly study and elaborately explain the Sankhya yoga system, explaining difference between matter and spirit, or performing any kind of pious work, or studying the Vedas, performing austerities and renunciation, that all of these, even together, they're just not enough to actually know the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And with mystic yoga, of course, we understand that one achieves, highly control of the mind and the senses, and one can travel by the power of the mind through the Ganges River to different places, to different universes. Or one can perfect the practice of yoga and take themselves to the higher planetary systems and have a life of enjoyment, but still this misses the point of one's existence in life. It's not to enjoy separately from Krishna, it's to enjoy with Krishna by serving Krishna. And similarly with becoming highly philosophical in the works of the Vedanta or studying the Vedanta Sutras, one may get into the habit of acquiring knowledge and just maintaining that knowledge and being stuck on the mode of goodness, because as we understand, most of knowledge is literally explained as being on the mode of goodness. So we're trying, of course, to become more elevated even than the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness helps us, of course, access transcendental knowledge by our activities internally and externally. If we situate ourselves in the mode of goodness, it becomes quicker and becomes more clearer for us to actually accept the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. Even sometimes Some people think that they will achieve, and we see it nowadays, you'll achieve success, or if you're termed to be spiritual or practicing a yoga, you belong to some kind of, you know, some kind of humanitarian group, or you belong to some ism where you're performing some work in, you know, in praise or for others' benefit, whether it's with animals or saving the rainforest or different things that keep on coming up. I'm sure some of us are aware of these different things. In the city, they hold these rallies and demonstrations when they protest about cutting down the trees and saving the dogs and saving the earth, all these different activities. And by doing these activities, most people think that they're actually making progress in spiritual advancement. But of course, we understand that there is always some tinge of pride or some level of, at least I'm doing something. So it's not exactly pure motives for performing those activities. And if you really analyze what happens as well in those people's lives, you know, you can be a very charitable person, be against, you know, mishandling or abuse of animals, and then you can be a meat eater. Or you can be, you know, against the fur trade or all these things, and then you're so into buying leather or snakeskins. So half the time these things don't, you know, they don't gel. There's a lot of hypocrisy that is involved. And in that way, it can't really be pure. Our karma activities can't really be pure because they're tinged with some motive of, you know, improving one's livelihood or improving one's prestige, one's name, or even one's fame. So these are all, you know, instances or activities that we're gradually trying to get away from. And especially this point of austerity and renunciation, that we can perform different types of austerities. And you do get a lot of people who are performing a lot of sacrifice, people who renounce, or people who we can see that they're not really attached to, sorry, pens are dropping. Austerity and renunciation, as I was saying. We can see that some people do have in their lives some level of renunciation, some austerities in what they eat, in what they wear, or in the places that they live. Now, for example, when you go to the loft or urban yogas, sometimes people talk about these breatharians, people who only subsist on air, or fruitarians, so this intense austerity, but it's not going to give anyone self-realization by just being a breatharian. Or some people who are very committed to, you know, sleeping only for 2 or 3 hours, there's this thing where people want to sleep less and they work hard all day and they get this rush, this adrenaline rush, because, you know, it's such an intense schedule. So all these austerities people are performing, or they go and live out in the city and, you know, by the farms or whatever, and they live very simply, but still in itself, that simple activity, it's not enough to actually guide one towards self-realization. It's not enough to actually give one pure devotional service. Even if it's under different spiritual institutions, you know, different school of thoughts or whatever, if we're performing austerities, if we're performing different types of renunciation, you know, not being so involved in the material world, if we're still not equating that with performing service for Krishna or for a higher purpose, then it's really fruitless. It's like a drop of water in the desert. There's no point to our activities. So this is something, of course, very tricky for people without Krishna consciousness to understand, that, you know, all these austerities and renunciation and even studying the Vedas, we're similarly doing the same thing, but our aim is fixed on understanding Krishna. Our aim is fixed on understanding the Absolute Truth. So, this verse, in 15:15, when Krishna says, Savasya chaham hiri sanivisto matara smriti jnana bahunam cha Varaischa sarva aham eva vedyo viranta krit veda vid eva chaham. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of the Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. So although Krishna himself is stating how he himself is situated in these scriptures that people are kind of misusing or neglecting as they try to add into their lives. So Krishna is explaining that depending on our activities, of course, he will either give us knowledge to remember him or to forget him. And one might think, you know, it's a bit unfair, you know, why doesn't Krishna just make us remember him? And because the process of Bhakti Yoga deals a lot with our heart and how we want to establish a relationship with Krishna, there can't be a matter or point of applying force. Or if you try and force someone to get to know you, or if you try and force someone to love you, it doesn't really work. There's going to be a lot of repulsion coming from that. So Krishna at any point in whatever we're doing, he can either give us the knowledge to remember him or forget him, depending on our sincerity of the heart. And of course, whatever we get is coming because we literally deserve it. It's not that we're getting any less or slightly more. Whatever Krishna is giving us is exactly what we deserve. So Krishna possesses as Bhagavan. Bhagavan means one who possesses the six main opulences of wealth, fame, beauty, knowledge, renunciation, and what's the sixth one? Wealth, fame, beauty, knowledge, renunciation, and strength. So Krishna as Bhagavan possesses all these different features, and he has the ability to express them as much as he wants. But for us, of course, we have minute qualities of Krishna. Because we're part and parcel of Krishna, we have those minute qualities. But due to the modes of material nature, those qualities become covered, and only the process of devotional service can actually awaken these different qualities. So here, when in the purport, they start speaking about how even those who become polluted by taking on a low birth, the translation explains that even dog eaters can purify themselves from their low birth by practicing devotional service. So this just shows us how the process of devotional service is beyond the modes of material nature. Because naturally we'll think that if someone is steeped in ignorance, there's no way that they can come out of it. But similarly, by practicing devotional service, which are activities that look pretty simple, activities that look normal as to not practicing devotional service, but still because this devotional service is centered around Krishna, the Absolute Truth, then it becomes activities on a transcendental platform. So although we might be honoring food or smelling flowers or coming into a building, which is a temple, or doing different activities like distributing food or collecting funds, to a mundane viewer it looks the same as any other person around the world. But we understand, of course, that these are activities that are performed within Krishna's internal potency instead of Krishna's Maya potency. So this is the potency of devotional service, that when one starts practicing devotional service, all these dirty things that are covering the heart and the consciousness get removed, and we really dive in and center all activities around Krishna. So I was thinking that we could also, because in the purport, one of the points that's mentioned, of course, I briefly mentioned about how even one who is polluted by having a low birth can become elevated by practicing devotional service, because it's more of looking at what we're engaged in, what our knowledge acquiring senses are engaged in, looking at what our you know, what we're actually doing with our senses, because that's how we interact with nature, that's how we interact with the environment, and that's how we interact with other people. So looking at our activities, even if we're coming from a low birth, we can, you know, we can start performing devotional service and become elevated and qualified to understand Krishna. Whereas, as it also points out in the purport, that we may be born in highly, you know, wealthy families or in powerful families, but our activities are of low class, are very degraded. So in this way we can see that it's not, you know, the type of birth that we take doesn't constitute the fact that we will practice devotional service. It doesn't mean that if you're born in a family of dog eaters, or in a Mohammedan family, or in a Christian family, or in an Indian family, automatically you're going to practice devotional service. It's solely based on what we're doing with our senses, what activities we're engaged in. And in that way, the superiority of the process of bhakti yoga surpasses all other yoga systems. Whereas you have to be either highly intelligent, or you have to have a certain amount of physical strength and tolerance to practice the different yoga systems. But with bhakti yoga, because all this knowledge that's given is already in the heart and it just has to be reawakened, you know, when you start rekindling that flame, then all the knowledge starts gradually coming up and up until we actually know who we are in relation to Krishna. So this is the superiority of bhakti yoga, and why Krishna is explaining it to Uddhava. Because in different ages, of course, there's different processes that are given for self-realization. You know, we have the deity worship or meditation or yagyas in the different ages. And within that, you know, it might, to some people, the process of mystic yoga is very attractive, or the process of performing austerities or renunciation becomes very attractive for them, because they think, you know, this is the topmost thing, is, you know, you're really focusing yourself and you're doing it with all your strength, whereas bhakti yoga seems sometimes to be too simple. You just chant and on a prasadam or associate with the devotees. But it's the topmost yoga system, especially given for this age, so it has even extra potency because it was inaugurated by Lord Chaitanya. So in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, the discussion between Ramananda Raya and the Lord, I was reading it yesterday and I was thinking how the process of devotional service as it's been given by Srila Prabhupada touches a lot on this point of faith, that unless we actually have some kind of faith in the process or some kind of faith in the spiritual master, then we'll actually go right ahead and practice devotional service. And when faith starts fructifying, it manifests itself in the relationship that we will establish, or the relationship that we will rekindle with the Lord. Of course, that comes out in the association of devotees. And I found a verse that's very similar to the previous translation, which gives us an idea of why bhakti yoga is the highest form of practice. So it's from the Adi Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 13, text 65. So it's Shava Sastre Kahe Krishna Bhakti Ravyakana Jnana Yoga Tapo Dharma Nahamani Ana. In all the revealed scriptures of Vedic culture, devotional service to Lord Krishna is explained throughout. Therefore, devotees of Lord Krishna do not recognize the process of philosophical speculation, mystic yoga, unnecessary austerity, and so-called religious rituals. They do not accept the process but devotional service. So we do know of the different, Vaishnavas do know of the different processes given in the Vedic scriptures, but the scriptures do give us a description as to which one is the highest. So sometimes in lectures, Srila Prabhupada would give an example of if you had, let's say, an 80-story building and you had stairs and you had an elevator, you know, which would you either go on the stairs or the elevator? And some devotees would say, no, we'll go for the stairs and work hard and be patient and tolerant and all these things. And then Srila Prabhupada said, just use your intelligence. You know, just go for the elevator. It takes you there quickly. So that is the process of devotional service, that we don't have to separately endeavor and perform different feats, different austerities, do this yajna, perform that sacrifice, and then give this way in charity, do this and do that, or offer, you know, obeisances or oblations to this demigods, to the sages, to the, you know, we don't have to systematically perform all these activities. But by practicing devotional service in itself, we are actually pleasing all the devatas, all the great sages. We're pleasing all the demigods, because they themselves, Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, they themselves, they're meditating on the Supreme Lord, and they become pleased when the Supreme Lord becomes glorified. And I remember just briefly I was reading how Narada Muni, in his previous birth as a Gandhava, they were singing, and he was one of the chief Gandhavas, and then they asked him to start singing, and then he started glorifying the demigods in his kirtan, and that's how he fell from his position. Srila Prabhupada explaining that, you know, any kirtan, any mantra should be actually done in glorification of Krishna and not anyone else. So even the devatas themselves, even the demigods themselves know that. So this is very, it pertains to us as well, that all activities should be done to glorify Krishna. And just on this point of faith, how different relationships are a sign of how much faith we have in the process, or how much faith we have in Krishna. And I was listening, finishing off with the conversation between Ramananda Rai and Lord Chaitanya, and how Ramananda Rai was explaining how when the relationship with Krishna increases in affection, the mood of fear and consciousness of superiority of the Lord gradually diminishes, and at this point the mood of faith increases, and this is called friendship. So when we start developing, when we start increasing our faith in the Lord and in the Lord's devotees, then we develop this friendship with the Lord. And it gradually increases from master and servant to one of the very more intimate relationships we can have with the Lord, whether as a friend or just, you know, having a special service attitude as a parent or as a conjugal lover. So this shows different gradations or different ways our faith is impressed upon the relationship we have with the Lord. And Ramananda Rai also explains that this faith or relationship with Krishna begins with the master and servant relationship, and then further develops into friendship, paternal love, or conjugal relationships. So like that, our faith in devotional service has to start growing, and as it grows, when we actually perfect our existence, when we actually perfect our devotional service, then we start getting into understanding what our eternal relationship with Krishna is. So our faith is heightened to such a level that we understand, you know, we know what our swarup is, we know what our relationship and our service to Krishna is. And this faith, of course, doesn't just spring up like any other quality. In the Harinam Chintamani, in the chapter 13 and 14, where Haridas Thakur is explaining the different glories of the holy name, it's explaining, I was listening to a lecture as well, but this point was being explained by His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, and he was explaining how this faith that we develop, of course, has to spring from how much surrender we have in the process of devotional service and how much surrender we have in the Lord. So he just started explaining the six items of surrender, how one accepts things that are favorable to devotional service and rejects things that are unfavorable, how one becomes convinced that Krishna will give us protection, depending wholly on the Lord's mercy, becoming meek and humble, and throwing oneself at Krishna's lotus feet. So for us to be able to perfect all these different qualities of Sharanagati, of surrender, we have to have a certain amount of faith. Because it's not just accepting things favorably, you know, yes, stay in the association of devotees, honor prasadam. You know, Krishna will test our faith. Krishna will test how much we want to surrender. And sometimes we may be put in different, in intense situations where we just might not want to practice anymore because it's just too difficult. So accepting things that are favorable to devotional service sometimes mean that we might get rejected by the community that we're coming from. We might get rejected by our own family members because we want to practice devotional service and they are against it. Or we might get, you know, rejected by, you know, your workplace or your family all of a sudden, just, you know, your if you're married or you have a children, they might not be into devotional service. So all these different tests, and we have to accept whatever the Lord brings our way as part of our growth in devotional service. And also sometimes if we might accept things that we really don't want. So if we're taking shelter of a spiritual teacher, if we're taking shelter of a guru and he suggests certain things that we don't like, sometimes we just don't want to do it. And there you'll see where our faith lies. Is our faith lying in our mind? Is our faith lying in our material desires? Or is our faith lying with the orders of the spiritual master? Because sometimes we have our desires, we have our plans, and we forget that, you know, when you accept a spiritual master, it's a two-way relationship. It's duty and commitment. So as you you become committed in that relationship, and you know, you perform devotional service in such a way that you please the spiritual master. So sometimes accepting things that are favorable for our devotional service means accepting things that we don't like. Because of previous conditioning, because of our karma, because of different anarchas, we can have a battle with these different items of surrender. And the second one, rejecting things that are unfavorable for Krishna consciousness or for practicing devotional service. Sometimes we have different attachments towards friends and towards family. And sometimes, well, most of the time, because you know, the association is not so good, we are forced to actually reject that kind of association. But for, you know, in different cases with individuals, it sometimes becomes difficult or easy to reject things that are unfavorable. It is once again basing on how much, you know, how much are we focused on surrender, how much are we willing to surrender, how much faith do we actually have in the process that yes, I'm going to follow these guidelines and this will lead me to Krishna. And sometimes Kadama Kanan Maharaj will use this example that you have this man who was dropped in a well, and he was saying, "Oh God, please save me, please save me." And then this voice from the heavens just came, and he said, "Okay." And he's like, "Okay, so who are you?" He's like, "I am God." And he's like, "Okay, God, please save me." So he's praying again, and he says, "Okay, just let go, I'll catch you." And this man says, "Okay, catch me first, and then I'll let go." So sometimes that is our attitude. We don't want to actually let go of our material desires. We don't want to let go of our contaminated or our concocted ideas about who we are and what the world is about. We don't want to let go because we don't have enough faith in Krishna. And this leads us to this conviction or being convinced that Krishna will give us protection. I mean, look at how much conviction, how much faith Srila Prabhupada had when he moved from Vrindavan and he started preaching in America. Like, you have to have, you know, a lot of faith and conviction that the Lord will actually give us protection. Even after you have two heart attacks, you're still convinced Krishna will give me protection. So this Srila Prabhupada's life, you know, shows us how much we should be surrendering, and Srila Prabhupada's life shows us how he himself was accepting certain things, would reject certain things, you know, was so convinced that the Hare Krishna mantra will give him protection. He had so much conviction of that. And he was only depending on Krishna because that's all he had. Later on, he had so much wealth, he had so many temples, he had so many disciples, but he still said, I'm just a servant of Krishna. Krishna sent me here, and he sent all of you. And his humility, Srila Prabhupada would always glorify his disciples and say, it's because of you that this mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is growing. And of course, depending on Krishna for everything that we need in our spiritual life, that Krishna is providing. And sometimes we can step out of the box and we can, especially if you're taking shelter of, if you're living in a temple situation where, you know, you're not with your family, or you're just basically depending on Krishna, because you don't have, you know, for myself specifically, it's for 6 years, you know, it's not like I have any support from family anyhow, whether it's financially or emotionally or materially. So it's like year after year I start thinking, how am I actually just moving from one temple to another? I don't have any money. I don't ever buy any clothes. You know, I'm happy, I have friends, I'm actually just not doing anything. How is all of this coming about? So we can gradually analyze our lives and we can see that Krishna provides everything that we need. That if we want to have friends, if we want to learn how to cook, or if we want to do different things, that Krishna arranges for our different desires. If we're sincere in our endeavors to serve Guru and Krishna, then Krishna starts arranging these different activities. I remember my mother would ask me when I was still just going around South Africa, she would always ask me, you know, what are you eating? Where do you sleep? And where do you get your clothes from? How are you, you know, we see all your pictures, you're on the, where do you get all this money? And I said, well, actually, Krishna is providing everything. That somehow or the other, this process is so powerful that whatever it is that you need, Krishna is providing. It's like you have this mysterious friend who gives you all these gifts, who pops in and out, and you've never actually met him. He's somewhere, but you've never actually met him, but he's taking care of you. And this is something that's really so wonderful about devotional service, that Krishna is always there and he never leaves. That wherever we go, even when we're struggling, Krishna is there. And in this book, when I was in Vrindavan, I was doing service in one store for the Gurukul called Blue Cow store, and they had Shivaram Maharaj's book, which speaks on the verse Napariyaham, where Krishna speaks with the gopis by the Yamuna, and he explains to them that, you know, I'm unable to repay you for your spotless service. And then the gopis are pestering Krishna, you know, questioning him, where were you, where have you been, you play the flute, you disappear, you go with this gopi, you leave us here, look at us, you know, our families have rejected us, you know, we're kind of like outcasts, you know, we break all the rules of religion, all the scriptures, you know, do you actually care about us? And then of course when Krishna's heart, because Krishna's heart is very soft, Krishna's sensitive, and Krishna starts explaining to them, because what the gopis would do to keep themselves alive, they would start enacting the pastimes of Krishna. And Krishna would be behind the groves, behind the tree, then he would be looking at them. And Krishna was saying to them that they had each other. When Krishna wasn't there, they had each other. They were crying on each other. And Krishna was saying, I was crying by myself. I was in so much separation that I was crying by myself while you had each other. So this just shows how sensitive Krishna is, how Krishna is always, if Krishna is that sensitive, and if Krishna, as the verses are explaining now, that Krishna loves serving his devotees, and Krishna is even captivated by his devotees, that he would do anything for his devotees. Krishna has this selfless mood of service towards his devotees and those who are serving his pure devotees. So it's really such a wonderful way of thinking of this process of devotional service, that Krishna becomes so involved in our life when we show him that we actually want to surrender. What to speak of us actually surrendering wholeheartedly. When Krishna sees that we're trying to surrender, he actually starts reciprocating. Krishna is not inactive. He's He's in the heart and He's watching our every move. And when we're ready, He will start, you know, giving us intelligence. And of course, this comes by constantly reviewing our spiritual life, our spiritual practice, and sticking to the rules and regulations that are given by the spiritual master. So she also sees with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he didn't start preaching until his spiritual master told him, now you chant Hare Krishna. And Lord Nityananda didn't also start doing his Sankirtan until Lord Chaitanya told him, now you go and Sankirtan, you go to every door and tell people to chant Hare Krishna. So this importance of sticking to the guidelines that are given by the Lord's representative, the spiritual master, is very important, because they're the ones who actually introduce us to Krishna. How can we, you know, how can I, someone who's so contaminated, you know, approach Gaur Nithai or Shishi Radhavallabha without my spiritual master's blessings? So as soon as we show that we are actually want to be committed, we actually have faith in Krishna, then Krishna won't really reveal himself so much. But when we do show Krishna that we want to surrender unto him, that we are willing to be, then Krishna starts arranging our life in such a way that we will be tested to see, do you really want to surrender or are you 50-50? So there are tests in spiritual life, as we see with the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj and Narada Muni. Narada Muni was testing Dhruva Maharaj, telling him, you're just a young boy. It's not, you should just go back to your palace and not start meditating on Vishnu or Narayan. You just go and play. This is not your time yet. But Dhruva Maharaj stuck to it because he was convinced, I'm going to do this. So this, the spiritual master also tests the disciple to see, how much faith do you have in me and the instructions I give you? And are you willing to carry out those instructions? Even if you fail, but are you willing to carry them out? Because sticking to the instruction means we're closely hanging on to the relationship, the intimate relationship we have with the spiritual master, that we try by all means, but because of our conditioning and, you know, the more mature nature, it might be a little difficult for us to do that. But Krishna sees every endeavor. Krishna sees every sincere endeavor we have to try and serve him, and he reciprocates like that. So whether we're coming from a low birth or whether we're coming from a rich, you know, it just doesn't matter. As long as we try and practice devotional service and gradually increasing our faith, which means that we'll gradually develop a relationship we have with Krishna through the spiritual master, and taking shelter of those instructions, then we'll peacefully practice devotional service and gradually overcoming the different obstacles that are there to remove the anattas in the heart, that are there to purify our consciousness. And in that way we can actually be firmly fixed and gradually rise into becoming Krishna's pure unalloyed devotee. I'll just stop there and I'll read the translation once again. Only by practicing unalloyed devotional service with full faith in me can one obtain me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am naturally dear to my devotees who take me as the only goal of their loving service. By engaging in such pure devotional service, even the dog eaters can purify themselves from the contamination of their low birth. Any questions or comments? No corrections? Thank you, Mr. Josh. All those Srila Prabhupada.